What is up, everybody, and welcome to another riveting episode of Uncanny, the unofficial X-Men 97 podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Condon, and today we're going to be going over the newest episode in the X-Men 97 series. This episode is called Life Death Part 2. Now, in the wake of what we all saw last week, where basically everyone who watched the last episode either cried and talked about it, either called their parents and talked about it. I called my mom and my sisters. My sisters watched the show, my mom does not, and I still cried and talked about it. So I was hoping and waiting and really anticipating seeing what was happening in the aftermath of what happened in Genosha. And crickets. Spoiler alert. Again, I like to spoil everything in this episode because it is all just a mishmash of new information. There's no way not to spoil it. So if you haven't watched the episode and if you haven't followed me yet on my channel, I'm going into spoilers in one, in two, in three. Okay, so we're getting into spoilers and let's get started. So as I was saying, this episode didn't give us any new information about what has happened to the characters that we last saw last week in Genosha. And I think a lot of that has to do with how the show is being produced and who is writing the episodes. So, you've heard me talk about this season so far and what episodes I've liked and what episodes I've thought were basically just filler episodes. This, unfortunately, is a filler episode, or what I like to call a Monster of the Week episode. It is definitely not written by Beau DeMeo, who was the writer who wrote the amazing Remember It episode. He is the sole author, aside from Stanley and Jack Kirby, for Remember It. But if you look at Life Death Part 2, the sole author for Life Death Part 2 is Charlie Feldman. And Charlie Feldman's writing background is mainly children's cartoons. And yeah, so we can see there's a qualitative difference between last week and this week, and we're going to get into it. So Feldman is taking us on quite the journey across space and time and several locations all at once in a tour de force of why should we care? And I say this with a grain of sugar as someone who loves X-Men lore, who loves a mythology, but nobody's going to care about Shi'ar politics unless they've watched all of the original series and read some of the comic books. No one is going to know who the hell these people are or care. And we haven't seen Xavier in forever in this series. We all thought he was dead, but guess what? He's not, right? And we're going to get into that. So yes, Charles Xavier is not dead, and he's walking around thanks to some pretty nifty prosthetics. But I digress. I didn't even talk about the intro. So let's do that before we continue. So in the intro, which please don't skip, we see some new stuff. And that new stuff is Nightcrawler being included in the introduction of the main characters for this show. He's given his own title slate. That was huge for me. I always dreamed that Nightcrawler would be in this animated show as a main character, and it looks like they've decided to do that. I'm not surprised that they decided to show that in the intro to this episode, because this episode was quite boring. And it just didn't go anywhere. Aside from maybe some redemption arcs. But that's about it. So I think maybe they gave us Nightcrawler in the intro to make us feel a little bit better about the fact that we're going to be getting a complete exposition episode where unless you have some nostalgia for the original series, you're really going to be bored. I'm sorry. This was a boring episode. This was poorly written, very boring, very clunky, and almost written for a completely different demographic. What is the target demo of this show on Disney Plus? It's not 12-year-olds. It's not like 10-year-olds. it generally is probably going to be people in their 20s and 30s. I'm sorry, Disney, that's just the case. This is a nostalgia trip. You're not going to be nostalgic about something you've never seen before. Newsflash, that's how nostalgia works. So when you're writing the content and you're trying to get people excited, you do what Bo DeMeo did. You bring elements from the property that we all love and care about. The drama, the high stakes, the nuances of character. But when you sandwich that episode between an episode that is just fluff, the writing is so plucky and just ham-fisted, it doesn't even seem to be within the same property. It's just bad. I'm sorry. Again, I don't know this woman. I don't have any vendetta against her. I'm just being blatantly honest as a critic and as someone who studies film and media. This was poorly written. It was just boring. I was actually struggling to get through it because I'm like, is this actually going to go anywhere? You know, you're trying to have the audience care about characters that we haven't seen yet, right? Oh, these two people are getting married, Xavier and Alandra. We really don't care because we haven't had any chance to connect with them on the 5 episodes prior. We've built no rapport. We have no emotional connection. We don't care. So, you know, it's nice that they're bringing Xavier back into the property. That was a surprise. I didn't expect that, but I don't know who they got voice acting for Xavier, but God, it didn't match. It just didn't. You know, I just don't even know where they're going with this. So, yeah, we have Shi'ar space, a battle with Shi'ar warriors versus the Kree. So it looks like there's some kind of Kree-Shi'ar war going on, and we're just going to pepper that into this X-Men show. Because I guess we know who the Kree are because of other Marvel properties. So, okay, we're going to go with that. We see Deathbird, who is the evil sister of Lilandra, and the way they write Deathbird in this, she very much comes off as the evil sister of Lilandra. It's, again, I could not, if this was put in front of me to review, I'd say it has to go back. The writing is so bad. Like, come on. You know, we see Gladiator as a character. So the Shi'ar Royal Guard are basically super-powered creatures from across the galaxy. The Shi'ar rule the Milky Way galaxy. They are the rulers of the galaxy. The Earth, or Terra Nova, is basically considered like a backwater. Like, the Shi'ar consider, like, Earth kind of like the U.S. considers the panhandle of Florida. No offense. It's just the truth. And so, like, we see this fight, and then at the beginning of the episode, we see a hologram projection of Lilandra, who's like, hey, people who are fighting, I guess, for some reason, we're in a war, God knows why, I'm going to get married to this guy, and he's a Terran, and his name is Charles Xavier. But I'm going to call him Professor Charles Xavier. Why can't you just say Dr. Charles Xavier? Does he even have a PhD? I don't know. I'm assuming he does. I believe he does. Okay, we were going with that. Some cool Easter eggs, though. We get to see the Royal Guard of the Shi'ar doing some really cool, like, space battling. Gladiator is basically like Marvel's plucky kind of wink-wink nod-nod to Superman. So, you know, basically, whenever you see Gladiator, just expect a lot of Superman puns, because he's kind of like Superman with a mohawk, I guess. We do see Vulcan, though. So, all right, you know that guy that kind of had the glowing eyes, right? And he was in that kind of red spandex suit at 3 minutes and 52 seconds? Yeah, that's Scott Summers' younger brother. Yeah, who was part of a class of mutants before Xavier brought in all the mutants from across the world with Nightcrawler and Colossus and stuff. But basically a team of mutants that were just wiped out by the island of Krakoa. We're not going to go into it, but if that is Vulcan, I hope that comes up later because, you know, that is Scott's younger brother. So, you know, he is a mutant. Now, if they've just glazed over that and they're treating Charles Xavier as the only mutant in, like, Shi'ar space, I really don't hope that's the case, because Vulcan is definitely a Terran and Vulcan is definitely a mutant Terran. Hopefully that's just not something that the writers forgot about or didn't care about, because that would be lazy, and I hope that's not the case. So yes, Charles Xavier, the founder of Xavier's Home for Mutant Education, or Gifted Youngsters, is alive, apparently, and living in Shi'ar space on the, I guess, city of Chandalore. And he's using prosthetics to walk in this, like, really kind of crummy-looking armor. It's kind of based in, yes, it's based in the comics, but it just doesn't fit the styling of the show so far. I know it's a different planet, but I'm like, oh, all the chrome and all the very, very tall things that don't really seem to have any structure or meaning. I don't know. I'm just not buying it. We see Landra, who is the Empress of the Shi'ar. And, you know, she and Xavier are, like, together. They're like a romantic item, you know. And, yeah, it's hard to really, you know, care because we haven't seen these characters in decades. Again, you know, they're getting married. Yay! We haven't had any chance to get to know Charles yet or Lilandra again. So it's kind of not going to come across as important as, I don't know, Rogue marrying someone or Jean and Scott getting married. That the audience would care about. But this, the audience, I mean, we're just kind of like, yay? It's like one of your neighbors. Oh, I'm getting married. Oh, that's nice. Do I know you? Do we talk? This is the first time I've actually had a conversation with you. Anyways, so yeah, he's walking and, you know, he's using terms like jingoism and performative, which, you know, would Charles Xavier use terms like jingoism and performative to talk about the way he's being treated by another species? I don't think so. Like, Charles Xavier was, like, a very refined, very thoughtful, very non-partisan, non, like, lingo-y person. Throughout the comics, he was never preachy. That was the whole point. He wasn't preachy, even though he was pluralistic and he was liberal and he was, you know, empathetic. He was never, like, politically preachy. He would not use a term like jingoism, which I'm not going to even unpack at this point. Just the fact that this person wrote Xavier saying, well, that was an example of jingoism. Xavier wouldn't have said that. Like, what? Okay, sure. So I guess the Shi'arans see Earth, as I said, as kind of a quagmire, and she's trying to tell Xavier not to go back to Earth to check on his students. But perhaps she could have said to him, since they're both psychics and their psychic abilities range space and time, that everyone thinks you're dead. But that didn't come up. Maybe they think you're dead. I mean, he wrote a will. So why wouldn't you have a conversation with Xavier like, well, shouldn't you kind of tell all these people that saw you as a father figure that you're not dead? Or, hey, Xavier, do you feel bad, Chuck, that you basically convinced all of these people, including, you know, your best friend, Magnus, that you're dead? Is that something you want to unpack? I mean, they didn't even, like, go into that, and we didn't get enough time to go into that because we are jetpacking over to the American Southwest, where we're back with Storm and Forge. And Storm is fighting a demon. And this demon, we are to assume, is a real demon, not a mental demon, though the lines are quite blurred in this. And my assumptions that this demon was like a bigger character, like Shadow King, or like, I don't know, Charles Xavier's evil twin, Cassandra Nova. Nope. It's just some, I guess, demon. Apparently, there's nothing more to it than then it's like a demon spirit. Okay, I guess that makes sense. You know, minus like the way they designed the character or the voice they used in it was kind of leading, but okay. I guess you're not going to play on nostalgia for this. So yeah, you know, Forge is poisoned. Storm is freaking out because she doesn't know what's real and what's not real. The demon is messing with Storm's, you know, existing phobia. So for those of you who've never read the comics or never saw the original, you know, X-Men series, Storm's claustrophobic. She has a horible fear of cramped spaces. As don't we all? Anyone here ever have a MRI in one of those machines? No, thank you. Especially when they gotta like lock your head in that like freaking vice thing and you can't move for like 40 minutes. Oh God, don't ever have to deal with that, folks. It's not fun. Wear a helmet, be safe, don't get cancer. Anyways, continuing on. So, you know, we see Storm battling this demon, both metaphorically and I guess literally. And then Forge, who, you know, was bedridden, comes downstairs with a Doctor Strange-like power set and, like, captures the demon with a similar styling to the way that Wong and Doctor Strange fight in Marvel properties. But Forge in the comics is supposed to have indigenous, like, spirit abilities, not Doctor Strange, like, magic powers. I was, like, so taken aback by this. I'm like, are they retconning Forge's Native American ancestral spiritual powers for the show? So it ties in with their other properties? That is so whitewashing. It really struck me the wrong way. And, it, you know, let's maybe out there, someone out there, disagree with me. Tell me that I'm not seeing what I would consider very much whitewashing. Forge is a Native American. He's an indigenous person. And his power set in the comics, aside from being able to make anything, he has a deep connection to his spiritual roots as an indigenous member of, I think, the Blackfoot tribe. But what they're showing in this animation is basically just copy-paste from the Doctor Strange series. Am I wrong? Does it not look like the animation and the graphics used for Wong and for Stephen Strange? Please someone call me out on this. If I'm speaking hieroglyphics over here, please let me know, because this really rubbed me the wrong way, and it kind of makes me question what Kevin Feige is thinking in this. Because you're basically just retconning what was a very much deep part of Forge's identity. Now, I know they talk about the herbs and how Forge's grandmother has this book, but the visuals, again, you're borrowing an existing visual motif from another one of your properties, right? This is a responsibility that you producers have. And when you do that, when you borrow another visual element from another property that's in existence already, we are to assume there's a connection. Right? What? Why should indigenous American spiritual magic look like what Stephen Strange and Wong had to study to know? Ugh, I was not happy with this change. I thought it was very, very, very poorly thought through. Like, seriously, you guys, come on. After such an amazing episode with Remember It, you're doing this? It really messed with what I consider, I guess, moral, you know, equivalency. Because I would never make this choice. I'm not a member of an indigenous culture, but when you're just taking some other visualization and you're just sticking it to a character because you want us to all be like, oh, he's using magic? It doesn't have to look the same as magic used by other people. You know, there's nothing wrong with showing diversity through the way that someone engages with magic. Magic is not some catch-all, right? Each culture has a unique connection to magic. Look at Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, right? That was developed, and the style was developed, and his use of magic was developed in a unique way. Not exactly like Stephen Strange, but in his own way, connecting with his own culture. The same could have been done with Forge. But I digress. We're going back to Shandalar. More jetpacking. So Xavier and Lalandra are talking about having sex, which, weird. And then Deathbird comes in and is like, hey, I'm a speciist, you know, because I'm a bad guy. It's just the writing is so bad. I'm a bad guy. I don't like him because he's a Terran. And Terrans are dirty. Like, who greenlit this? I'm so sorry, whoever you are. I mean, I'm sure you're a great writer and you do good work, but really? And then, like, they want Xavier to prove his loyalty to Lalandra by wiping his memory of Earth and of his, like, students and friends? Like, the Shi'ar wouldn't do that. That doesn't make any... That's horrible. It's just messed up. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I don't know enough about the Shi'ar to know if that would be something that they'd put Xavier through. It could be based in the comics. I mean, it probably is. I don't know. I just, again, there's so much going on in this episode. I just feel like a lot of it is just filler. Just here's stuff to watch. Just, you know, again, after last week was so good, this is just kind of catching me from left side. So I guess Xavier is really wrestling with whether to erase his memory for this woman that he's having a fling with or that he's in love with, and also for the fact that maybe he just doesn't like Shandalar or this Shi'ar culture. I mean, he said that they think art and music is an attribute of, like, mental unwellness. Would anyone here want to live in a society where they thought that art and music and culture was an attribute of mental unwellness? Or that idealism was dangerous? Does that sound like a place you want to live? No museums? No universities? I don't want to live there. Oh, this whole episode just made me feel kind of icky. Did I make you guys feel kind of... It just makes me kind of feel... And even the way they animated Charles Xavier and the way that his voice was coming across, like, really? It's Charles Xavier. He doesn't have to sound like an old white guy. Like, the dude was basically designed off of Martin Luther King Jr.'s whole existence. Why not give Charles Xavier, like, a decent voiceover? Even get, like, a notable individual to do his voice? Like, someone from the civil rights movement? I don't know. Oh, it's just, ugh. It was just rubbing me the wrong way. You know, I guess, you know, we continue this episode. More blah, blah, blah. Xavier gets punked. Like, I'm just taking notes on this. Like, what am I watching? Like, why go from episode 5 to this just planet universe hopping expositionist thing? Ugh. We're back with Storm and Forge. They're in this cave looking for some plant that Forge's grandmother said could, I guess, fix any wound. It's like some kind of super fungus. There's a lot of cool funguses out there. I just tried nutritional yeast yesterday in my popcorn because my friend, my neighbor, person I'm romantically involved with, recommended it and it was delicious. Anywho's, he talks about the eradication of the indigenous peoples in the Great Plains, which, yes, was a real thing. It's important to mention, but not just mention and pass it off. Like, he just kind of drops it like, yes, my people were eradicated in the Plains War. And Storm was like, yes, that was pretty sad. End of discussion. Like, just we're just going to drop this like a mic drop and we're not going to even reference it. We're just going to, like, put it in there so that we can please people, right? So we can say, look, we did it. No, that's not how you talk about these issues. Take an example of what the now fired Beau DeMeo did. You don't have to just shove something in your face and say, look at this. This was bad. Let's move on. No, it's called subtlety. It's called storytelling. Like, episode 5 was freaking beautiful. Because it wasn't just hitting you over the head with, hey, we're just gonna shove this word salad in your face, and then make sure we pepper in that word salad notable events from the past. But we're not going to really talk about them, and they're not going to really have any context for the story. We're just going to say it so that we can check a box and say, look, we're being diverse. We're talking about the social issues, aren't we? Wink, wink. Sell the Hasbro toys. Anywho, so Storm musters up the courage to go spelunking for this fungus, or more accurate, cactus. So a certain cactus that only grows in subterranean darkness. I'm actually going to look up and see if this is a thing. I am interested because I have never met a cacti that I didn't like. Kidding. This is a joke. Anywho, so Storm is kind of trying to get through all the crevasses and dealing with claustrophobia. And then, of course, just kind of like, you know, avalanches, we again see this character who I thought was going to be a bigger deal, who's just apparently a figment of Storm's imagination, who also bit Forge, who used magic to suck it into an oblivion plane, but it's still there. So yes, this thing that Forge sucked out of our world into the netherworld, but is now still there, we continue. Back to Chandelure. So we teleport again to Xavier and Lilandra. Again, a parallel that doesn't work. You're talking about two different, very different stories. Yes, they're two people who have a romantic connection, but that doesn't mean that when you juxtapose these two stories, it's going to make sense from a narrative perspective. Like, come on. Please, you must have went to school for this. I hope. Don't hate me. So Xavier's about to get, like, mind-melded and forget his history with everyone he loves and forget Earth. And, you know, there again, Deathbird comes in and, hey, that Terrans suck. I'm a racist. I'm a bad guy. Like, this is not a Saturday morning cartoon. This is not freaking Shark Girl. This isn't like Adventure Time. Come on. Why is the writing so bad? Oh, and you know, yeah, Gladiator punches Deathbird because Deathbird tries to scratch her sister. And, you know, it's fun to see an evil Superman or something, but oh, God. And then the worst part of this episode. Charles Xavier's like, oh, I forgot. I am the strongest psychic mutant in the universe, and I could just do this. Like, why would you even have to say that in exposition? I am the strongest mutant in the galaxy, and I could forgot about my powers, which I have. Like, really? Really? Charles Xavier would utter the word, I can't believe I almost forgot that I am the preeminent psychic in the universe. And the only reason that this woman, Lilandra, is in love with me is because my psychic powers can span time and space. Really? And he's just going to say, oh, I can't believe I forgot that I'm a mutant and I have powers that every day I have to wrestle with because I can hear everyone's thoughts around me. And when I was 10, it gave me constant nightmares and panic attacks. Like, come on, be an adult. Like, seriously, have some respect for the property at least. Anywho, he brings all of the Shi'ar Royal Guard and, you know, Deathbird's fighters, Deathbird herself, and everyone into a classroom in the astral plane. A classroom, because, you know, he's a professor. And that's on the nose. And he's wearing his OG X-Men, I guess, uniform, which is just like a brown tweed suit and a blue tie. And he has chalk, because professors use chalk on a chalkboard, right? And a professor teaches in a classroom that looks like it's a K-12 classroom, right? And when we go to a school that's at a university, you have little desks and apples, right? Is that right? You gone to a university and it had a desk with a little wooden flappy thing that kind of covers where you're sitting, right? No, it doesn't. That's not what colleges look like anymore, folks. Most colleges are seminar style, or most colleges have just normal chairs. It's just so stupid. Like, you really think Xavier would be so petty and juvenile that he would bring the Empress of a galactic political body into a astral projection of a K-12 classroom in America, and they wouldn't consider this an insult? They wouldn't look at this and say, well, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen anyone do to me. No, you shouldn't marry this guy. He's a complete asshole. Like, what? This is what the great Charles Xavier would do. My powers, I forgot them. I'm going to put everyone in a K-12, like, sixth grade classroom. That's just so stupid. And then, you know, and then to have Xavier find out that Genosha happened because he just starts seeing random stuff happen in the astral plane, and like a giant gambit turns into like a death skull with all these like skeletons. It's just bad. Oh, I'm so sorry. It's bad. You went from episode 5, which is like Brahms' Fifth Symphony, to like Weird Al Yankovic. No offense. It's just bad. And I just, I don't even know if I want to finish this review. I'm honestly that bummed out about how bad this was. So, you know, I guess yada, 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 Xavier, and we get back to the Southwest where Storm's spelunking, and she discovers that she had the powers all along. And, it looks like I just had to remember that I was a goddess, and wow, I'm a goddess again. And I can fly and do the superhero flight. And wow, I've made my own clothing out of nothing. I've just made clothing out of thin air. Because I guess Storm is now a telekinetic mutant who can shape things from the parlance of her own imagination. Like Proteus, who is a mutant who can create things out of thin air because that's his power. But Storm can't do that. It's cool to see Aurora in her OG, like, X-Men costume. Yes, I agree. I loved seeing Storm in her OG X-Men costume. Like, with the white glowing eyes and the beautiful, like, black velvet, like, cape with the wings. Loved it. It looked great. Like, her flying around and her being a goddess again. Loved it. I loved it. I did. I thought that was really nice. And how she overcame her inner demons and the actual demon and persevered. She reconnected with her goddess. Just like we all want to do in a yoga class. I get it. I like that. But, like, that moment seemed almost cheapened by the fact that it was smushed in to this episode with a whole other story about Xavier and Alandra that had nothing to do with what was going on with Forge and Storm. You're just, I guess, trying to wrap up a narrative thread that you started in the previous episode while introducing another completely separate narrative thread. It's just, you know, again, I don't know what to do with this, you know. And then they see that, genocide has occurred in Genosha. And we still haven't seen the aftermath. So, yeah, folks, this was what I would like to call a filler episode or a Monster of the Week episode. It doesn't even deserve a podcast. So hopefully this episode gets the criticism that it needs, so that the executives at Disney Plus can say, well, they like what Bo DeMeo did, but they didn't like what this woman did, and maybe we just need another writer. If this show gets renewed. But hopefully it'll shine on the other episodes that were co-written by Bo DeMeo, because those were good. Anywho, I'm hoping that next episode is better than this, because this was hard to watch. Until next time, keep it classic.